the next two weeks I want to discuss Shavuos, which is coming up in a little less than 2 weeks now. It'll be 1 week from this Saturday night will be Shavuos. The holiday of Shavuos is one which I think, on the one hand, is probably one of the most joyous and most significant days of Jewish history. On the other hand, in terms of a holiday, it doesn't get as much focus because there's less of a to-do, I guess, to get ready for it. It's only a two-day holiday. Israel's only one day. As opposed to like Pesach or Sukkot, Pesach, there's a lot of preparation. Everyone knows, you know, the Seder is something which every Jew looks forward to and participates in throughout the year. Sukkot requires building a sukkah. Comes after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So there's a lot of, you know, build-up until those two holidays. Shavuos just kind of pops up on you. It's a short holiday and it's gone. There's no major preparations to be done, at least physically. Hopefully mentally and spiritually there are, but physically there's nothing. You don't have to clean your house of chametz. You don't have to prepare a seder, build a sukkah. There's nothing to do. So it kind of loses some of its meaning in that we don't have to work so hard to get ready for it. So it deserves a lot of discussion. And in general, as I always say, every holiday, you only gain from the holiday that which you put into it. So the more you prepare yourselves in advance, the more you take out of the holiday. But if you don't think about it in advance, so then when the holiday comes, it kind of passes over us, and we don't get to pull out from the holiday the inspiration and excitement that we should have in every Jewish holiday. Then there is a build-up, which is counting of the Omer, supposed to build us up to Shavuos. Counting the Omer we discussed a few weeks back, supposed to indicate our excitement for that day. Shavuos is the holiday which marks when God gave us the Torah at Mount Sinai, and therefore we count every single day from leaving Egypt until Shavuos to try to show our excitement. We're so excited for the day to come. We can't wait for the Torah to be given to us. So just like that very first year in the desert, the Jews all had that goal in mind, so to every year, as we build up to Shavuos, we're counting the Omer day after day, and we're trying to build up our excitement, which we just can't wait for that day to come. We're so excited. But again, we have to understand the power of the day, what that day means to us. Now, Shavuos has many, many elements to it. The Torah refers to it as a harvest festival. In Israel, it's the time of the wheat harvest, classically. So it was a harvest festival. Every Jewish holiday also has its agricultural symbolism, in addition to its spiritual symbolism. So we know that Pesach is the holiday of the spring, when the plants start to sprout, Chodesh Aviv. The Shavuos is the harvest festival. And Shavuos is called the festival of the ingathering, when they would gather in the crops from drying in the fields. So every one of the three major festivals has its agricultural component, so Shavuos is the harvest festival. But beyond that, you know, our major focus in Shavuos is not the harvest, it's the fact that the Shavuos is the time where we stood before God at Mount Sinai and received the Torah. Even that has many elements to it, because part of it is the fact that we actually received God's wisdom in the Torah on that day. That's when God spoke to the entire people. He said the Ten Commandments. Moshe ascended the mountain and received the tablets and received the rest of the Torah. But in addition to just the information received, there's also the whole event, the experience of Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai was an experience like no other in human history. It's where an entire nation heard God speak at once. We were able to perceive the spiritual visions. We heard the sounds. We saw the thunder and lightning. We heard God speak to every single Jew. It's an experience which our faith is based upon. It's something which every Jew needs to reflect upon, because the basis of our entire faith in God and our confirmation of the truth of the Torah is all based on the experience in Mount Sinai. It was made to be a spectacle. It's supposed to be an experience which we all had in order to confirm the authenticity of the Torah and the authenticity of Moshe at the time. The Rambam, Maimonides, describes how not only did God speak to us, but God actually, we all saw God speak to Moshe as well, and appoint Moshe as his messenger. So Moshe's authenticity was totally confirmed at that event. So the rest of the Torah, which Moshe taught us, we know came from God, because we actually saw God himself appoint Moshe to be his messenger. We usually view Mount Sinai as an awe-inspiring experience. It inspires fear in a person, the fear of God. Like the Torah itself says, that God says, I came to speak to you, and the verse tells us, in order so that the fear of God should be upon your faces. I mean, God was trying to show us his greatness, his power. And when you experience God's revelation and God speaking to you, so it should, as they say, knock the fear of God into the person. You know, we should operate the fear of God. That's what we should have. It was an encounter with God, and it creates a fear, a responsibility, an accountability, all of that comes along with a sense of obligation. All of that comes along with the experience in Mount Sinai. So that's the Shavuos in a nutshell, is that experience. We mark that experience of encountering God and interacting with God at Mount Sinai, and upon that our entire faith is built. But what I want to focus on more today is not the elements of fear, not the awe-inspiring experience that Mount Sinai had, but the joy of Shavuos, the joy that every Jew felt in Mount Sinai, and the joy that every Jew should feel on Shavuos itself. The Talmud tells us in Tractate Pesachim, it talks about how on some level, Shavuos should be the most joyous holiday of the year. Now, usually, if I asked everybody in the class what's the most joyous holiday of the year, so I don't think we'd all answer Shavuos. You might say maybe Purim, you might say Passover, you might say Sukkot. We call Sukkot Zman Simchasim, the time of our joy.
Some people say Yom Kippur.
Yom Kippur, yeah, that's right. So the Mishnah tells us the Yom Kippur was the most joyous day of the year, right? That's what the Mishnah tells us. Very good. But none of us would have jumped to Shavuos necessarily. But yeah, on some level, Shavuos is the most joyous day. The sages of the Talmud teach us that there's a dispute in the Talmud. Is one allowed to spend the entire day of a holiday totally immersed in prayer and study and not eat? Or do you have to sit down and have a joyous festive meal on a holiday? So it's a dispute. Some say yes, some say no. Some say you should split the day, half and half. You know, spend half the day in prayer and study and half the day enjoying your festive meal. There's different opinions. But the Talmud tells us, when it comes to Shavuos, everybody agrees that you must eat. Even the opinions that say, on other holidays, you can just spend the entire day praying and studying, being spiritual. On Shavuos, you have to celebrate. You have to celebrate through food. And the Gemara says, why is that? Because it's the day we got the Torah. So, of course you have to celebrate. How can you not celebrate the day we got the Torah? How can you spend your entire day in prayer and studying and not have a celebration? And on that, Rashi tells us we have to rejoice with food and drink, and we have to display to ourselves and to others that we're so excited, we're so happy that we received the Torah. So Shavuos is a day which, because it's the day where we've received the Torah, we have to celebrate. The Talmud continues, and it says that when Rav Yosef celebrated Shavuos, so it says he would tell his servants to make for him it's called an iglat tilsa. Iglat tilsa was a cut of meat that was viewed as the finest cut of meat in the times of the Talmud. So it says it seems to be it was the third calf born from a mother cow, and it's supposed to be the most tender and delicious meat. But it was as asking for the finest cut of meat out there. And on Shavuos was the time where he would request the finest cut of meat. So, you know, I'm sure he had a nice meal on Pesach and a nice meal on Purim and a nice meal on other holidays. But Shavuos, he'd go out of his way to make sure he had the finest cut of meat possible. And he explained himself, and he said, why is it that I have to have such a festive meal? He says, because if not for Shavuos, I'd be like any average Joe out there in the street. Shavuos made me special, because on Shavuos I received the Torah, and that's what makes a Jew special. So Yosef said, I have to celebrate Shavuos to the greatest extent. And furthermore, it says that Rav Sheshis, every 30 days, he would be studying all the time. Every 30 days, he'd go out to the doorway, and he'd say, rejoice my soul, rejoice my soul. And he was showing how much joy he had in his Torah study. He would make sure, despite the fact he was so studious and so devoted to Torah study, he'd make sure to take a time once a month to go and show himself how much joy is involved in Torah study. And that relates to Shavuos. Shavuos, the day we received the Torah, that relates to the idea of joy on Shavuos itself. So the Talmud in this passage is telling us that Shavuos is a day which needs to be focused on in terms of the joy which Jews should feel in receiving the Torah. It's interesting that it says in the Psalms that the Pekudei Hashem Yisharim, that the laws of God are straight, Mesam Chelev, they give joy to the heart. I mean, we have to view the laws of God in the Torah as something which brings us joy. The Torah is not just a book of nice ideas, of requirements, of obligations, of rules. The Torah is something that should bring us great joy in our lives. It should be something which gives us which happiness and fulfillment. You know, everybody discusses, why is it we have the custom to eat dairy foods on Shavuos? You know, one of the most famous customs out there. Everyone has to have their dairy foods, their cheesecake on Shavuos. And many, many reasons are given. One of the reasons given is that the verse in the Shir Hashirim, the Song of Songs, it describes the Torah with the terms Devash v'chalav tachas l'shoneich. It's honey and milk under your tongue. The Torah is compared to honey and milk. So therefore, on Shavuos, the day where we receive the Torah, we make sure to indulge in some milk. That's the idea, because Torah is compared to milk. Now, you think about milk. Milk is a substance which is really the building blocks of life. Talk about a mother's milk. It gives life, it gives nourishment. And Torah is compared to honey, the sweetness of honey and milk, and the nutrition and the life-giving force that milk has for us. And we have to view the Torah in that way. The Torah is in our lives. It's not just rules and obligations. Nobody would take the, if you want to look over the code of law of the state of Maryland, no one's going to say, oh, it's honey and milk to me. You're going to say, these are laws, they're good for society, they're helpful, some I like, some I don't like. But you're not going to say, this is sweet as honey. You know, maybe some might say that with the Constitution, if you're really patriotic, you know, Constitution is sweet as honey. But besides that, I don't think you're going to find people describing typical rules, law books, as it's sweet as honey, it's delicious as milk. But yet the Torah is described as something which is like honey and milk. It's so sweet and delicious to us.
Yeah. In America, we have lemon laws.
Right. Right.
Sometimes we...
Right, you have those laws, which you know are... Right. Negative impacts. So standing in Mount Sinai, receiving the Torah, brought us incredible joy. And what is that joy? Because the Jewish people became different. They became who they are at Mount Sinai. Now, God gave us not just the Book of Rules, but it was a special treasure given to us. It was God's infinite wisdom. It was God's mission for the world, and that was put into our hands in Mount Sinai. So at Mount Sinai, we were all so excited to be there. We couldn't wait to receive the Torah. We count from leaving Egypt all the way till Shavuot. We were so excited to receive the Torah. And once the Jews were there, the Torah describes how they were so excited to have this encounter with God. You know, for various reasons, the rule was in Mount Sinai, the Jews weren't allowed to touch the mountain. They all had to stay back from the mountain. The elders were allowed on the mountain, Moshe was allowed even further up the mountain, but the regular people only had to stay back from the mountain. And Moshe is told by God several times to warn them, stay away from the mountain, don't touch the mountain, if you touch it, you're going to die. And Moshe constantly had to warn them. So why did he have to give us so many warnings? Why was God so concerned? So Rashi tells us in the Torah, Rashi says, because the people had such a yearning desire to have this encounter with God, they couldn't hold themselves back. It was so exciting for them. It was such a great pleasure, and they understood the great pleasure of being close to God. And being a Jew and seeing the Torah, they couldn't hold back. And they were all so tempted to run up to the mountain and just, jump on. So Moshe kept saying, no, stay back, don't go near the mountain, over and over again. But people understood the great joy and pleasure in receiving the Torah, in being a Jew, and having this encounter with God. Everyone understood that at Mount Sinai. One of the customs on Shavuos is that we read the book of Ruth. Ruth on Shavuos. There's five Megillas that we have in the Tanakh. So we have Megillas Esther's read on Purim. You have Kohelas read on Sukkot. Eichas read on Tisha B'Av. And we read Shir Shirim on Pesach. And then you have Ruth to read on Shavuos. So obviously to figure out the connection of each Megillah to the holiday upon which it's read. So what's the connection of Ruth to Shavuos? So again, many, many reasons are given to reading Ruth on Shavuos. But one of the major reasons is that Rus is famous as probably the world's, at least the Jewish world's, most famous convert. Ruth was originally a Moabite, and she actually was intermarried to a Jew. Her husband died, and she accompanied her mother-in-law back to the land of Israel and opted to become Jewish. She was such a righteous woman that she merited to be the great-grandmother of King David. And the Mashiach will descend from Ruth. That's how righteous she was. But why is we read it on Shavuos? Because at Shavuos, essentially, every single Jew became a convert. Prior to receiving the Torah, we had no obligations towards God. We were no different than any other nation out there. And we were very thankful for God for saving us from Egypt, and we did have our special connection through our ancestors, through the patriarchs and the matriarchs. But yet, before the Torah was given to us, we weren't obligated to serve God in any way. We didn't have the mitzvahs, we didn't have the wisdom of the Torah, we didn't have any of this. At Mount Sinai, we all had to commit to accepting the Torah, we have to commit to the obligations and requirements and laws of the Torah, we have to commit to be those servants of God. So similarly to a convert is somebody who approaches Judaism and says, right now, I'm a Gentile, I'm not bound by the Torah, but I see the truth of Torah, I see the beauty of Torah, I see the beauty of a Torah lifestyle, and I want to be part of the Jewish people. And we put them through a rigorous process to become Jews. It's not a simple process. But they make a commitment because they see the beauty and the truth of the Torah. That's the commitment they make. So in Mount Sinai, we all did the same thing. And on Sinai, every single one of us committed to the Torah in the same way that a convert would come and commit to the Torah. The truth is that when the rabbis in the Talmud teach us how to become a convert, we actually learn all the rules from what happened in Mount Sinai. The Talmud tells us, just like the Jews in Mount Sinai had to undergo a bris, a circumcision, they had to dip in the mikvah, and they also had to bring an offering at the time. So too, a convert Jew has to go through the same three-step process. A male convert has to have a circumcision, everyone has to dip in the mikvah, and in the times of the temple, they bring an offering as well. That's all derived from what happened at Mount Sinai. Because Mount Sinai was a national conversion, that's what it was. We went from being regular, a Gentile nation, I guess, to being Jews. That's what happened at Mount Sinai. Now when a convert comes to convert, we interrogate them, we put them through a rigorous process in order to test, are they really worthy of becoming Jewish? And the first thing that we try to test them on, now Rambam tells us, is that we try to test them on their sincerity. Why do you want to be Jewish? So we all know the issue of those people out there who want to convert just for marriage. And the Rambam says you have to check them on that. Maybe you're converting because you're interested in marrying a Jewish man or a Jewish woman. Maybe you're converting because there's money involved in some way. I'm not sure what money the Jews have, but some money involved in some way, right? Maybe you're converting because it'll bring you to power, or to fame, or for glory, or for honor. All sorts of different ulterior motives a person might have. And the potential convert has to answer all those questions and say, no, I'm only converting because I sincerely see the truth of the Torah, and I want to be part of God's nation. I want to be part of the chosen people. I want to be able to carry the mission of God to the world in the best possible way. So after that, we also warn them of the risks of being Jewish. Being Jewish isn't always so simple. In many ways, the Rambam tells us that we have to inform the potential convert that sometimes keeping to the rules of the Torah can be hard on a person. You know, the Torah has a lot of obligations. If you commit to Judaism, you have to stick to the rules. And we tell them, even people who are Jewish at times have difficulty maintaining all the laws of the Torah. So the convert, again, has to respond in the affirmative. I understand that, and I still want to be Jewish. And the potential converts, the way the Rambam describes it, has to say that they keep coming back out of love of God, love the Torah. With love. Meaning we're looking for sincerity, we're looking for love in a convert. Because the convert has to come to the recognition that Torah is a pleasure, Torah is a joy. To connect with God is something which is the greatest pleasure in the world. And that's what drives them to becoming Jewish. And as long as they keep coming back to us, despite all the warnings, and show this attribute of the love of God, love of Torah, at that point we say they can be accepted. Furthermore, we warn them not just of the difficulties of keeping to the Torah, but the Rambam says we also tell them something else. It's very interesting. The Rambam says we tell the potential convert, you have to know that the Jews in the modern world, right now we're in a state of exile, we're not in our ideal state in the land of Israel, you have to know that, we go through a lot of trials and tribulations. There's been a Holocaust, there's been expulsions, there's been persecution, anti-Semitism, a lot, we've gone through a lot. And you have to know that being Jewish is taking on a risk, because many people in the world don't like Jews. And you have to know, if you accept that, then you're actually putting yourself at risk for all these trials and tribulations that Jews have to go through. We tell them that. And the Rambam says, what are we expecting the convert to respond? Rambam says that the convert should respond, Ani yodea, I know, I'm aware of this, ve'eini kedai, but I'm still not worthy. I mean, to be a Jew is worth it all. Despite all the troubles, the tribulations, despite all the difficulties that we've gone through, it's still worth being Jewish, even with all that in mind. So those are inform them as well, but those are 3 points I want to focus on. So we first, we look for the sincerity, we warn them of the difficulties of being Jewish, and we warn them of the risks that they have to go through. Now in the book of Ruth, which is also another source for how we treat a convert, so we have, there's a give and take between Ruth and her mother-in-law. So her mother-in-law, Naomi, is heading back towards the land of Israel. Her two daughters-in-law, Ruth and Orpah, are accompanying her. So at that point, both the husbands have passed away. All the husbands have passed away. It's just these three women. And Naomi tells them, I'm going back to live in the land of Israel. I suggest you go back home. Your family is here in the land of Moab. You're not Jewish. I've got things to provide for you. I have no more children right now. I'm an old lady. Right, go back to your family. The rabbis tell us that they actually came from a royal family. They came from royal lineage, their Malav. There's a famous king discussed in the book of Judges, Eglon, who was their ancestor. He came from royal family. He said, go back to your royal families. What do you need me for? So Orpah says, okay, see you later. No, and she leaves. But it says that Ruth, she's stuck with her. And at that point, Naomi tries to dissuade her from going with her to become, this is the point where she's committing to conversion. And Naomi, she tries to dissuade her. And she tells her a lot of things. It's not so clear in the book of Ruth exactly what she was telling her. We see Ruth's response. We don't see what Naomi told her. But the sages tell us what was the conversation. And one of the points made is that Naomi tells her, I want you to know that if you become Jew, right now when you're a non-Jew, so there's a lot of things you're allowed to do, and it's totally fine. And the Jewish court, the Beis Din, will hold it against you because you're not Jewish. If you become Jewish, there's many, many Torah rules that if you violate them, the Beis Din has the right to punish you. And some of them could actually incur capital punishment. That's what she tells Ruth. You know, until now, you could do all these things and no one's going to stop you because you're not a Jew. You're not bound by the laws of the Torah. But if you become Jewish and you do one of these sins and incur capital punishment, so the Beis Din has the right to kill you. You could be executed. So Ruth then responds to Naomi. She tells her, Bashir Tamusi Yamus, where you die, I'll die. So he tells her. So what's the impact of that statement? She's saying that, I understand that if I become Jewish, there's a risk involved. I'm now at the mercy of the Beis Din. I understand that certain laws of the Torah actually can incur capital punishment, and I can be executed. And I want you to know, even if I become Jewish, and I have to be executed by Beis Din, it's still worth it. That's what she says. It's still worth it. Because the privilege of being a Jew, the privilege of it being somebody who has the Torah, is chosen by God to fulfill the mission of the Jewish people, has that special closeness with God, makes everything worth it. And even though she may convert, and she may shortly after do something wrong and be forced to be executed by a Beis Din, she says, it was still worth my time. It was still worth being a Jew. That's what she tells her mother-in-law. So Ruth is a model for us, what it means to the privilege of being a Jew, what it means to be part of the Jewish people. And we read that on Shavuos because on Shavuos was the time we all committed that very first time on Sinai to be Jews, to be devoted to God's Torah and God's laws, and to be those that have a special relationship with God, to carry that mission to the world. And every year, ever since, we have to reaffirm that on Shavuos. Every Shavuos, we're repeating that same experience. We have to reaffirm that commitment we made to God on the original Shavuos. So we have this privilege of being Jews. We have God's mitzvahs, God's commands, which enrich our life and connect us with God. Teach us very valuable lessons. We have the wisdom of the Torah, which gives us understanding of the world. It elevates us. It transforms us to different people. We have the ability to create a relationship with God in a way which non-Jews don't have that opportunity, because they don't have God's Torah in order to create that relationship. And we get to be the ones to perform God's purpose for creation and bring God into the world. That's the mission of the Jewish people. So every single convert, as they come to become Jewish, recognizes this. Because that's why they're becoming Jewish. They see, despite the difficulties that I might go through, and despite the fact that Jews may have a lot of troubles, despite the fact that Torah is difficult, I still want to be involved, because I know how special it is to be a Jew. Like we said, Ruth left a royal family to become a beggar. I mean, when Ruth came to Israel, she became a beggar. That's how the story goes in the book of Ruth.
She became what?
A beggar. She was poor. She became a beggar. She had to go and collect charity. That's what she had to do. That's how she fed herself for a while. There are other examples of this in the Torah as well. The Torah relates that Hagar, who was the wife, one of the wives of Abraham, she came from royal lineage in Egypt. And there is one of the women who married into Esau's family. Esau was descended from Abraham as well. Her name was Timnah. She also came from royal lineage. You have a lot of women in the Torah that came from royal lineage and said, I'm willing to put aside my royal lineage in order to connect to the Jewish people, because it's worth it to me. They understood that the true royalty is being a Jew. It's not having the power of a king, and it's not having the money of a king, but just as, you know, we're referred to as God's children. So God is the king, so we are princes and princesses. That's what we are. God is the king, then we're royal, because we're God's children. God says in the Torah that the Jewish people are considered his firstborn child. So if we're God, for the king of all kings' children, that means we are royalty. That's what we are. The Rav Yonasan Ibishitz is one of the great thinkers of the Jewish people, you know, about 2 centuries back. So he writes that a convert has done something which is somewhat superhuman. because they've left aside an entire life in order to become Jewish and recognize God. And we live in a dark world where the Jews are in exile. And he was writing this when the Jews were in Europe being persecuted day in and day out. Nowadays, thank God, at least in America, we feel much more safe and confident. But when he was writing this, I mean, it was in those ages, those centuries, when we were all centered in Europe, it was never calm. You know, there was always issues. And he writes that a convert's done something which is really superhuman, because the convert's able to recognize God in a world where God is not clear. In a world where the Jewish people are down in the dumps and persecuted, this person is willing to set aside their previous life and commit to becoming Jewish, knowing all the risks and all the challenges. They saw there's a truth here, there's a beauty here, there's a joy in a Jewish life, and put it all aside. He writes that we should kiss the dust of a convert's feet because of what they've done. The Torah many, many times tells us we have a mitzvah to love a convert, we should take care of a convert, because what they've done is something which is such a spectacular feat. They've shown such respect and such love. So, how we look this back to us, and I don't know everybody's backgrounds in here, whether a person comes from a conversion or not, the point is now, we have to always ask these questions once again. Every Shavuos, we have to view ourselves standing at Mount Sinai. And at Mount Sinai, we have to make a lot of commitments. And we have to commit to God, we have to commit to His Torah, we have to make ourselves devoted servants of God. And Mount Sinai require not only the fear of God, but we have to show the love of Judaism. So on Shavuos, every single Jew essentially, deep down, is a convert. Because that's where we all came from, and that's happened on Shavuos. The source of all the rules of conversion are derived in the Talmud from what happened at Mount Sinai. So our job before Shavuos, you know, as we're here now, 2 weeks before Shavuos, our job is to develop these feelings. All the feelings we expect from a convert. Like we said, the sincerity. Now, when we perform a mitzvah, are we doing it with sincerity? Or are there other motives in mind? Do we recognize the Torah as something which is beautiful, which is a privilege? Do we recognize that it's worth being a Jew despite the difficulties that are sometimes imposed upon us, whether it be from keeping the Torah, whether it be external pressures from anti-Semites and the like? Do we feel that special privilege which is there to be part of the God's chosen people? So Shavuos is the time we're supposed to truly express how much we love God's Torah and how much we love being Jews. Now, once you're Jewish, you can't opt out anymore, so we're not making a choice. But these questions are still there for us to answer. I mean, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to answer those questions. We should be able to answer those questions. And if it's expected from a convert to answer those questions, then for sure from a Jew, we have to answer the same questions. You know, someone who is currently Jewish should have the same attitudes or even stronger attitudes than a convert has. Because, you know, once we've been Jewish, we have to really recognize the privilege of being a Jew. There's a blessing we say every single morning in davening. We say, Baruch Atah Hashem, blessed are you, God, Shalos Ani Goy. You didn't make me a Gentile. A convert says that as well, because once a convert converts, you know, they're a new person, and they're recreated as a Jew. But that's the time to focus. We're not here to disparage non-Jews. You know, the Torah says non-Jews also are created with the soul, in the image of God, and also deserve respect. But we're saying that in order to recognize our special privilege of being Jewish. And that's something which we always have to recognize, that, you know, we're not just moving along, and we're bound by all these extra rules and regulations and different standards, but it's a privilege for us. We're a special select people that's supposed to be able to bring spirituality and bring message of God to the entire world. I want to share with you a point made by my teacher, Rabbi Lapiansky. He made this in a recent class that he gave. And it's a very interesting thing. Every single holiday is referred to in the Torah as Mikra Kodesh. And I think the Archbishop translates it as a holy convocation. Convocation exactly is. A holy calling. It's a holy day. Mikrai Kodesh. We say it also in Kiddush. In Kiddush, we use those words, Mikrai Kodesh, or said in Kiddush. So the word Mikrai Kodesh, if you look at the commentaries, it's not so clear how to actually define it. Whatever, again, article says convocation, I think, is the word used in the article, I don't know exactly, literally, how to translate it. But there's two different kind of opposing views in commentaries how to understand that concept. The word Mikra in Hebrew, Kuf Resh Aleph, could come from the root of calling out. That you call someone, you designate something. If I say that somebody kara, he called to somebody else. So it could mean it's a holy calling, which has the connotation that a holiday is something that we designate. Originally, in the times of the temple, so the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court, would actually designate the new months, which then would lead to the date of the holidays. So there was no set calendar, and in those days, whatever the Beis Din declared to be the beginning of the month, that then would impact when a holiday would occur. So it basically, Mikra Kodesh Beis Din, that means that we actually call out the holiday. We select, we designate when the holiday should be. Other commentaries translate it kind of the opposite, that Mikra could also come from the word of something just kind of happens, something which just occurs, happenstance. You have in Hebrew the word Mikre, which actually has a little different spelling, but it's the same concept, but just something which happens, just kind of an occurrence. And some commentaries say that holidays are holy occurrences. You know, they occur, and they're holy. So, but usually something that occurs is the opposite thing that you designate. Designating means that I intentionally declare something. Occurring means it happened, you know, regardless of me. It just happened, it just occurred. So it's very interesting that you have, you know, this contrast in terms of a holiday. Is it an occurrence, or is it designated? So the way this can be understood is that it really depends on a person's attitude. And let's explain it, you know, in the following way. That everyone has their own regular everyday routines in life. Right? And we expect things to go a certain way. Expectations. Now, when something happens out of the ordinary, there's two ways to look at it. You look at it as a disruption. That I know that like my shower broke, and it's so frustrating, I have to call a plumber, and I have to stay home from work, it's cost me $200 to fix it, and you get frustrated. So we call that mikre, just an occurrence, you know, it wasn't anything special, it was something which drew me out of my routine, in a way which was negative, it disrupted my routine. But sometimes you can have a disruption which isn't a disruption, rather it's, you know, we'll call it you've been selected for something special. A doctor who's on call, so he's going about his regular day, it's a weekend, so Sunday's out with his family, and he gets an emergency call, he has to go to the hospital. So does he say it's a disruption, or does he say, no, I'm somebody who has unique talents, and I can go and do something good for the world. And when he goes to the hospital, hopefully he views it as part of his privilege, responsibility, being a doctor, not as an annoying disruption in his day. Now, both of those people had their expectations of a day, and had their regular schedule, and they're pulled out of their routine. But you can view it as a disruption, it just kind of an occurrence which was annoying and drew me out of my routine. Or you can view it as a call to a higher purpose. You know, the doctor should view it as a call to a higher purpose. I have to go now and save a life. You know, and it can be the same feeling, but it's all how you view it. So too when it comes to a holiday. So how do you view a holiday? Mikra Kodesh, right? Is it something, you know, we have our weekly routines, right? And Shabbos is a little bit different because Shabbos is part of the weekly routine. Shabbos comes every single week. But a holiday, we always say, you know, when does Pesach fall this year? Right? What day of the week? Because it's kind of random in our schedule. We don't know when it's going to be. In the days of the temple, it was actually random because Rosh Chodesh could have been different days. The month begins different times, and the holidays could occur different days each year. So it's something we kind of view as it draws us away from our daily routine, daily schedule. So how do we view that? Do we say, it's just an occurrence. It's like the occurrence. It's a disruption in my schedule. I know I have to do it. You know, I have to fix my shower, but it's an annoying disruption. I have to keep this holiday, but I'd rather be doing my daily routine. It drew me away from my goals. Or do we say, no, when God creates a holiday and calls you out from your daily routine and says, okay, today's the day you're not going to go to work, you're going to go to shul, you're going to eat matzah, you're going to blow the shofar, whatever you do, whichever holiday you're speaking about, it's that you're a doctor on call. And God's saying, today I'm giving you a special opportunity based on your status. I'm giving you a calling. I'm giving you something which is going to select you and bring you to a higher purpose. And you can view it that way as well. So if you look at Mikra Kodesh as just a disruption, a happenstance, it's an occurrence, so it's kind of annoying, you know, it gets in my way. If you view it as God calling out to us, God saying, I'm designating you to observe this special holiday, so then you say it's a very uplifting experience. You know, I'm so glad I had the opportunity to leave my daily schedule and connect with God. So I think you can view this concept in light of the entire Torah. It's not just a holiday. But the Torah itself received it on Sinai and Shavuos, and the Torah gives us a lot of obligations, mitzvos, guidelines. And how do we view the Torah? So we can view it that, you know, I have my wants and my needs, my daily routines, and the Torah is kind of a disruption in what I do. You know, I'm a committed Jew. I'm not going to try to keep the Torah best of my ability, but you know, I find it as kind of an annoying disruption. I'm going to go back to my daily business. So then the Torah, the mitzvahs become kind of like occurrence, you know, just things that draw you away until you can get back to what you want to be doing. Or you can say, no, the Torah is something which is a calling. I'm being called out of my daily routine to perform a mitzvah because I'm a special person. I have a special mission in this world, and I have the ability to do something which no one else can do. It can uplift me, it can elevate me, it can make me into a greater human being. It can make the world a greater place to live in. So how do we view that? Is it a call to rise up to the occasion, or is it just something which kind of interrupts our daily routine that we're never forced to deal with? How do you view it?
So,
I mean, really, you could take the example of the broken pipe and say even that is God calling to you. That's how we should view it. Why did he break my pipe? Maybe God's trying to train me in patience. Or maybe God's trying to, maybe that plumber needs some money. I don't know. But God has his reasons why things happen. So you can view every event in life, you could actually view as God calling out to you. But certainly when it comes to a holiday or to a mitzvah in the Torah, we can't view it as a disruption in our lives. Rather, we understand the privilege. If we view it as a disruption, so no convert would ever become Jewish, everything was a disruption in his life. The convert understands that no, these are all privileges, and I want to have those, I want to be on call. Right? Every single doctor in med school understands the responsibilities that it takes to be a doctor. And you know, you can never have a day off, because if there's an emergency, they're going to call you in. So a Jew needs to understand the same thing. Just like a convert understands, if I become Jewish, there's a lot I have to do, and there's no days off. You know, God didn't say, well, every Tuesday you can put the Torah aside. You have to, Tuesdays we hear a study, maybe Wednesdays we put the Torah aside, you know. But no, God says, of course, every day is a day where you're going to be on call. And if I have mitzvah for you to do, I'm going to call you up to do it. You know, your cell phone's going to ring, and they say, there's an emergency, you have to go do this mitzvah. And you have to do it. But don't view it as a disruption, view it as a privilege. So Shavuos is the day where I think that deep down, we should have the greatest joy, because the day where we became God's chosen people. Until Shavuos, we had no commitments towards God. You know, we had gratitude. You know, thank you, God, you took us out of Egypt. Thank you, God, you know, you gave us great ancestors like Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but we made no commitments. On Shavuos, we made that commitment to God. God said, here's my Torah, I need you to commit to it. We, as converts, you know, we actually went through a process. There was circumcision, there was immersion in mikvah, and we even brought offerings at that point. We brought sacrifices. And that made us into the Jewish people. And at that point, we should have the strongest feelings of thank you, God, for giving me the privilege of being a Jew. And that's the power of Shavuos, is to appreciate what the Torah actually means to us, how it has immeasurably changed us as individuals, changed our nation, changed the world. You know, even on a world level, Isha Torah has a fascinating class. Maybe some people have heard it before. I forgot what it's called. It's called World Perfect, I think it's called. And it's many, many examples of how the Torah hasn't just changed the Jews, but has changed the entire world. And how the entire scheme of ethics and morals in this world have been totally overturned and changed by God giving the Torah at Mount Sinai. And how so much of what the modern human mind understands and thinks is really based on the Torah. And that class is taking it far beyond the Jewish world, taking it to the general world. I think it's available even online. I'm sure you can download it. It's a famous class that Shatora has been giving for many years. I think the name is World Perfect. But for Shavuos, the time where we reflect upon how Torah has enhanced our lives, enhanced our nation's lives, enhanced the world. It's time to recognize that Judaism, without a commitment to Torah, is not really what God wants out of us. That's not our mission. Being Jews means that we are devoted and committed to the Torah, and we're going to fulfill God's mission. But we're not doing it out of fear and out of a sense of obligation, which is also part of it, but we're doing it out of a feeling of privilege and love and joy. So when we go back to understanding the stage of the Talmud, how they said you have to, Shavuos, you have to celebrate. You know, other holidays, maybe perhaps you could spend the entire day praying. When Shavuos, you have to sit down and have a festive meal. And when Rav Yosef ordered his servants to bring him the finest cuts of meat on Shavuos, it's all for this purpose. Because Shavuos is the time we have to feel such joy, such simcha of being Jews, and there's such gratitude that we have the Torah, that we can't not celebrate. It's a day where every Jew has to come to celebration. We have to express that joy. That's the power of Shavuos. So with 2 weeks, in the 2 weeks in advance now, I think that the most powerful thing we can do in order to draw inspiration for Shavuos is to think through those questions that are asked to a convert. You know, how would we answer those questions now? You know, can we answer those questions in the affirmative in the same way that a convert answers them? You know, are we sincere in our practice? Not second Judaism, sorry. Are we sincere in our practice? Do we recognize how privileged we are? Do we recognize that essentially, no matter what we go through, it's all worth being Jewish? And hopefully by Shavuos, we can have some deep emotions and feelings in terms of those questions. And then when we celebrate Shavuos, we'll have a much more joyous and deep celebration. Yeah?
Did you say a convert had to bring an offering?
Yeah, they did. Nowadays, they can. So the Rambam says that once the temple is built, the convert then will bring the offering. I mean, the conversion will be effective without the offering. But if the temple was built, every convert would have to go and bring their offering. So they all owe an offering to the temple at this point. That's the Rambam says. Interesting. I mean, it's interesting. When it comes to conversion, the accepting mitzvahs, the immersion in the mikvah, those are things which, and I believe also the circumcision, are deal breakers. I mean, if they don't do those things, they can't become Jewish. The offering is something which they're obligated to do, but they're Jewish nonetheless. So nowadays, when they can't bring their offering to the temple, so now, at this point, you know, they should all write themselves an oath. I owe you, you know? I owe a sacrifice to the temple, and then when the temple is built, they'll have to bring their offering. But they're still Jewish nonetheless. Yeah?
Before Matan Torah, were the Jews obligated to obey the Noahide laws?
That they were. Yeah, there were no... that they were. And the rabbis would tell us they received a few laws prior to Mount Sinai. When they were in between those 7 weeks when they left Egypt until they got to Mount Sinai, God gave them a few laws. Different examples are given. It could be they were given the laws of Shabbos. They may have been given business law prior, and the laws of honoring parents. I think those that Rabbi say were given prior to Mount Sinai. And that was given to them from Abraham, right?
Which one?
The Brit Milah, so circumcision, right? So those they seem to have had, that was given to them within those weeks in between those few laws.
In Mitzrayim,
seemingly they were like any other Noahide, yeah. Besides the idea of a bris mila, they had that as a tradition from Abraham that they had, which many of them didn't do in Mitzrayim, it says. So really, they ignored that one. Most of the tribes besides Levi ignored that Mitzrayim, regardless. Any other questions? Okay.